Welcome back to Turnabout Breakdown, a Ace Attorney podcast. I forgot what game we're playing. It's been a while since we recorded. It's the Gay Lawyers game. We're playing Great Ace
Attorney.
We are
playing Kanan Lynch 2.
I'm not playing Kanan Lynch 2. You should listen to Something Rotten. They talked about that one. Couldn't be me, but great respect to them. We're playing Great Ace Attorney, a game that I'm enjoying a lot. Not really in a way that surprises me, but I guess in a way that feels very refreshing after the previous few seasons of this podcast. We've been taking our little Christmas break, and I was really excited to get back to the game, so...
Me too, actually.
Hell yeah.
It's kind of odd because, like, we only have one case left now after we talk about this one. I don't know. It feels like we're only, like, halfway through, like, the first game.
It feels like we've barely started, but
yeah,
I'm hoping that my recollection that, like, it's basically one game with 10 cases is correct, because what the fuck? They haven't... Like, this is the first case where we have an actual resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting. Would you like to dive right into the summary?
Okay.
This was a little bit short, so maybe we do two paragraphs each?
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to flip a coin or...?
No, I'll stop.
Okay.
Miura Suke is pronounced a lawyer by Lord Strongheart for his performance in the last case and given a new client. Strongheart also tells them that McGilded was killed and heavily implies that he was involved in the evidence forgery. Oh, we've immediately found a mistake. When I say he, I mean Strongheart.
It's fine.
We meet Inspector Gregson, another Holmes/Sholmes. Why did I write this so confusingly? Another Holmes, brackets real, as in a real Sherlock Holmes character, /Sholmes, brackets Suzato knows him, as in he's also in the Sholmes stories in-game, character. I don't understand this reference. He says that Van Ziekes is the Reaper of the Bailey, not because he convicts every defendant, but because they literally die regardless, like McGilded did. Miura Suke and Suzato meet their client, Suzuki Natsume. Suzuki is a real Japanese author, and I don't really understand what he's doing in this game, but maybe we'll figure it out. I did some research, and it's very funny. We'll talk about it later. They also investigate the crime scene and visit Sholmes, where they meet Iris, the pink-haired girl from the end of the last case. It turns out that she is the one writing the Sholmes stories and punching them up to the ones we see at the beginning of the case, / in real Holmes stories. She's also actually good at deduction, unlike Sholmes.
Punching them up is a way to describe that.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing we'll definitely come back to.
We investigate Soseki's place, meeting the landlord, maid, Kat, and Sholmes. After investigating some, we learn from a dance of deduction that the maid is actually the landlord's wife, pretending to be a maid to save face in London's class system where not having any household any household help is seen as low class. We also learn they fought and a small fire broke out. Returning to Soseki, Susado, Ryunosuke, Sholmes, and Soseki,
You read it right. Writing.
Returning to Soseki, Susado, Ryunosuke, Sholmes and Soseki discuss the cursed Reaper, the problems with the Shuri system, and Soseki's haunted lodges. This sounds like the second paragraph of a pitch. Ryunosuke overcomes his doubts about the London justice system and agrees to defend Soseki.
Look, I only know how to summarize things in one way, and it's pitch-wise. The court opens with a barrage of racism, in case you forgot that's what we're doing here, and then Gregson lays out the facts of the case. The jury immediately swings to guilty, and Ryunosuke has to do a speedy summation argument to turn things around. We get eyewitness testimony from a sleepy police officer and his wife, and find some new evidence, a burned book held by the witness. Clearly the book belongs to the landlord, Garadeb, although this doesn't convince the jury, and a second summation argument is necessary. Ryunosuke suggests that Mrs. Garadeb might have hurled the knife out of the window during their fight, accidentally stabbing the victim.
Van Ziekes argues that this is impossible as the victim was found on the other side of the street and the windows don't open enough for the objects to go that far. The police officer and his wife also testified to such, but let's leap that if the victim had been on the other side of the road, the officer would have to deal with it. Instead of going to his anniversary dinner as he would have been within his speed. As it turns out, I saw the A-cab and started laughing. As it turns out, he moved the victim to make it someone else's problem, closing the case with a nice dose of A-cab. After the trial, Soseki said he's returning to Japan to write, and also probably to escape the Reaper's curse and the demons that haunt London. Sholmes offers Ryunosuke and Susado a place to stay with him. Later, he makes some veiled remarks about the darkness lurking beneath London.
We did it. That's the case. I think this one was interesting, like, I don't know, I saw one of your later notes, but to me this case was, like, short and, like, snappy, which, it's been a long fucking time, but did you disagree with that?
I think, like, the first half, quote-unquote half, like, the, which was basically investigation, was shorter than the trial, so it didn't feel, I think it had, like, enough mystery, and the mystery was interesting enough throughout, at least for me, that it ended exactly when I was, like, just starting to, like, feel frustrated about the length. If it would have, like, another trial, like, part three or something, this would be, like, a different conversation. But I was, like, hooked throughout, so I didn't mind. And I think there were, like, a lot of... There wasn't, like, a big payoff in terms of, like, story. Mostly, like, just setting things up and, like, kind of closing that, like, introductory arc for Inosuke, maybe. In terms of, like, emotion and, like, what he's actually, you know, what he believes in. But yeah, I mean, as we were saying in the beginning, it kind of feels like, I don't know, the end of the first arc or something, or like the end of like the a very long introduction. So I'm curious about how the next one is going to be. If it's going to be like an auto-conclusive chapter, or it's going to have like an awful cliffhanger at the end and it's going to be like, yeah, play the second one, fucker.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you were saying about the arcs. Like, it feels to me like this is the very start of the second arc. Like, in the first three cases, we were like, here's Ryunosuke, like, becoming a lawyer, like, trying to study to become a lawyer after Kazuma's death. Well, obviously, like, that happened in the middle of it. But, like, it's, like, the first three cases, like, here's who Ryunosuke is. Here's, like, this thing that propels him to have to become a lawyer, and then here's, like, his first test as a lawyer, but, like, that still feels like the start of it because of how it's set up with Strongheart being like, yeah, do this to see whether you get to stay.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, you can kind of assume that he's gonna get to, but still, and now this one feels like that, okay, Ryunosuke is in London as a lawyer, and this is what he's starting to do. So it feels interesting in that way. But it does also feel something like the first conclusion we've had, because like I said before, like, this is the first case where something actually happens at the end. Although it's interesting, right? Because what actually happens at the start is that we find out that Magnus McGilded, the defendant from the last case, is dead. So we find out that, like, Van Ziekes, you know, I made that joke in the first episode where Van Ziekes appears, where I was like, oh, what's the difference between this and, like, the demon prosecutor and, like, Mars Edgeworth, who, like, convicts everybody? Well, the difference is he doesn't convict everybody, they just die anyway, which I do genuinely think is a really funny escalation. But yeah, it feels really, like, dramatic that, like, we have that big cliffhanger at the end of the last case, and then they're just like, oh yeah, McGilded died.
It's funny how no one, like, approached the guard. He was like, oh yeah, we're seeing somebody, like, breaking the glass or something. Like, yeah.
No, it was grim, yeah. And then, yeah, Strongheart is basically like, I'll forge all the evidence I want. I don't care about that. Great. great. And then he never showed, like, he only shows up at the beginning of these two cases, like, we haven't had any other, like, reference to him, which I think is kind of funny.
That's because he has, like, 3 minutes, 35 seconds, you know? Like, he doesn't have a lot of time.
Oh my god, the like, every time he shows up, there's, like, this ticking clock sound in the background. And I think it's because his office is supposed to be, like, in Big Ben or something. I don't know, there's, like, a lot of clockwork behind it. And he's always looking at this pocket watch. And I think this is, like, very thematic for him. And, like, the British Empire in general, like, so much of it is based on, like, timekeeping and, like, I think there's, like, some connection there. And also it's, like, very metaphorical in, like, people running out of time, Ryunosuke, like, not Ryunosuke necessarily, but, like, these people having, like, really speedy trials. Like, I think there's a lot of thematic stuff going on there that's interesting. And then the fucking noise of the ticking clock just drives me insane. I'm like, please pick a different metaphor. I'm going to lose my mind. But yeah, after seeing Strongheart, we meet Inspector Gregson, which is fun because, like I said, he's like a very common... I mean, he's a Sherlock Holmes character, and he's very commonly portrayed in adaptations. So it's fun to see, like, their version of him, who is very, like, standard Ace Attorney cop kind of thing. Like, definitely has, like, shades of Gumshoe, right? But maybe a bit more, like, professional. Has his fish and chips, because, of course, it's British.
You're gonna laugh about this. But I searched Sherlock Holmes BBC Gregson to remind me like, who he was. And I do remember him, so that's cool.
Wait, did you watch Sherlock BBC?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. God. The, like, different context in which we would have watched that show is so funny to me. Because that show to me is just like a Tumblr show where everyone was shipping John Locke, obviously. Like, and it was part of this big fandom, like, crossover. Like, I don't know how to explain it. But basically there was this, like, everyone who watched Sherlock, who I, like, was talking to, also watched Supernatural and Doctor Who. And it was, like, this big deal. Like, they were the three fandoms. And there was a lot of overlap. And that's the only association I have with BBC Sherlock. Like, in my brain, you can't have watched it because you're not on Tumblr. Like, it's not possible. Anyway, Gregson's in that. I don't really remember him either. Like, I can pull his face to mind, but I don't really remember what he was like or anything. I would say this Gregson is, like, more memorable, but obviously we've only just been introduced to him, so... I think it's cute when Sisato sees him and is like, oh my god, it's Inspector Gregson from my show, from my books that I love to read.
Yeah, and there's, like, this interesting thing where, like, Iris, like, basically, like, pays him an appearance fee, I think it's called. Whenever, like, she includes him in, like, the magazine, which is like, okay... And we basically use that as, a, like, an evidence piece to, like, get him to, like, tell us stuff. Very fun.
Yeah, and also he loves Iris. What does he call her again?
Lady... Wait, I think I wrote that down. Long live her ladyship. And I was like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, I don't really know what they're getting at with that. Maybe just, like, she pays him, so he really likes her. I'm curious to see, like, their interactions. I assume they interact in the future, but I don't really remember any of it, so it's kind of interesting. I want to pick up one thing from your notes, which is so funny to me. Actually, I'm going to find the exact note so I don't misquote you. Are the chips rolled with a newspaper page? That's so funny. Then brackets. Maybe a thing back then. That's a thing now. That's how they fucking make chips. They come in newspaper. We're doing cultural exchange on this podcast, folks. It's just like Greatest Journey.
I love London. I wish it were real. I would go and visit.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't know that. I think it's becoming less common because now people put them in, like, polystyrene, like, boxes and stuff. But definitely you can still buy chips rolled in newspaper, for sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, my pitch is gonna be, is gentrification, like, affecting the newspaper chip tradition in London?
Well, yeah, but then they would serve them in, like, I don't know, like, torn out pages from, like, old books, you know? Like, that would be the more gentrification angle. So yeah, that's Gregson, a lovely British cop. He's pretty, like, standard. Racist. He is pretty racist. Everyone in this whole game is racist. Yeah, not too much to comment on at this point, I think. Like, just very standard in the narrative. But, like I said, fun to see how they adapt, like, a Sholmes character or a Holmes character. It's so hard for me to get that the right way around. And then speaking of real people, Gregson isn't a real person, but speaking of people who also exist outside of Greatest Journey, Suzeki Natsumi, who is a Japanese novelist and poet who spent time living in London, was not arrested for murder in real life, but really did not like it, which is very true to the Suzeki of this game.
Huh.
I don't know, just a really interesting inclusion, right? Because the other characters in this who are not made up by Takumi or, you know, the whole Capcom team, let's not do our tour theory here, they're all Sherlock Holmes characters, at least so far. I can't remember if there's any other people like Suzeki, but like Suzeki's a real person and I don't really understand what he's doing here still, even after, like, playing this case. I don't know, there's something interesting there with, like, there being a lot of things in this game about, like, narrative and literature and stuff. Like, I would love to talk after this about Iris and how she writes the Sholmes stories and how they get changed and stuff. But having Suzeki himself is, I don't know, it's really interesting.
I'm reading an interview because, you know, and they're asking him, like, in the series, you have real persons or characters who copy or appear, like Sherlock Holmes or Natsume Suzeki. What did you do to get permission for that? Regarding Holmes, I wrote my proposal with some worries. Well, when I asked the legal department of Capcom, they confirmed there will be no problem. As for Natsume Soseki, we contacted his relatives and they were kind enough to say I could do whatever I wanted with him.
Yeah, so I just pulled that quote off the wiki because I was looking into the Soseki thing and I thought it was so funny because that quote is, they could do whatever they want with him. That's really funny to me. But I didn't read the rest of the interview, so that's interesting. Yeah, so I guess we should talk about Iris as the writer of the Sholm stories, right? Which I think is really fun. I believe it was the end of the last episode where you were like, who is writing the Sholm stories?
Okay, but now my question is, who is narrating these stories?
Ah, well, actually, that is kind of answered here, I believe. It's a little bit confusing, right? Because it's taken from, like, it's twisted. So basically, when Suzato finds out that Iris is writing them, she's, like, amazed. But then she says, like, hang on a minute. In the Sholm stories, you know, he has a partner called Dr. Watson. You know, like, in Sherlock Holmes. And Iris, whose last name is Wilson, is like, oh, well, I just wrote myself into it, but I wrote myself into it as, like, a old guy, like, Sherlock's age, because that's what the people want, basically. And so the Sherlock Holmes stories are written from Watson's perspective, and the Sholm's, like, clips that we've seen at the beginning, which might just be direct from Sherlock Holmes, I'm not 100% sure. But either way, they're also written from this Watson perspective, which is Iris, basically. But the thing about it is that we know Iris wasn't there for the cases, at least the ones that we've been involved in. So basically the whole system is, Sherlock comes back, tells her the story, and then she, like, writes a story, one, like, putting herself into it as a character, even if she wasn't there, and two, but, like, also as, like, this weird old guy, and two, like, just rewrites it to whatever she thinks would be fun. So, like, in the case with Kazuma, the original Sherlock Holmes story and the quote that we get at the beginning is about this speckled band and how it was a snake that killed the victim. Yeah. And we know in the real case that didn't happen, but Iris wrote it that way just to, like, make it more interesting, basically. So there's, like, a lot going on here about, like, narrative and, like, I don't know whether it ties into, like, this whole thing about, like, oh, we must uncover the truth no matter what, which is definitely, like, a big thing in this game. But I think, like, contrasting those two things is really interesting.
So it's funny that they haven't said, like, what exactly the relationship between Herlock and Iris is so far.
Yeah.
And they're literally living at their attic at the moment.
But they did say something about it, right? Do you remember?
I'm doing, like, a very serious thinking face right now, which you cannot see.
Iris specifically says that she's not Sherlock's daughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I saw that, I assumed it was kind of like a Phoenix Trucy thing. Yeah.
Right. That's like a good way of looking at it, definitely, especially the direct comparison to Ace 24. I just thought it was interesting to bring up because you were like, I know one thing about this game, and it's that the pink-haired girl is Sherlock's daughter. And I was like, well, kind of. What she actually says is that they're roommates, which is really funny because I cannot stress enough that she's like 8 years old. Actually, she says she's 10.
10. Yeah.
10. She's 10. But still. I did write normal European child and Ace Attorney because, like, you know, how all the people go to Europe to become lawyers at, like, 16.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that's one, at least one of the spoilers that I saw is kind of, like, four, I think. Because the other ones are... Anyway. What is happening in this case?
Well, after talking to Iris, we go back and investigate Suzuki and, like, you know, where Suzuki lives, which is, like, a lodging house where, like, the upstairs part where the landlord lives is, like, full of, like, war paraphernalia, and then the downstairs bit where Suzuki lives is, like, the most dark, dank room in the world with the windows boarded up, which is a real thing. They talk about the window tax, which is so funny because it's like, it's true, it's real, but like it's so like, hey, did you know this weird fact about history? Like it feels kind of not out of place because it is like relevant to like this narrative of like Suzuki living in a horrible place. But I don't know, the way they just turn to camera and be like, a fun fact about London is that they put a tax on windows, and so all the rich people boarded up their windows so that they could pretend they didn't have as many, or like they technically didn't have as many, and then they made people live in lightless rooms, and then the government was like, this is not working, but then they never actually unbricked the windows. And it's just a weird like thing to deliver to camera.
Shutagumi, like, researching at 3 a.m. in his house, being like, oh, weird facts about London.
Yeah, exactly.
Was the thing about the maids true as well? That doesn't seem hardly to believe, you know, but...
Yeah, exactly. It definitely makes sense, this thing about the maids, like, oh, if you don't have a maid, you might as well be poor, basically.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that is also, like, to add to, like, a bit of the drama of the case and, like, learning about what's going on between the Garadevs. Garadev, by the way, is another thing from Sherlock Holmes that they're just using as, like, a name because they can. It's, like... Any word that I don't recognize or, like, thing that seems slightly out of place, I'm Googling just to be like, yeah, okay, I can confirm this is a Sherlock reference. So in this early investigation, actually the way that we learn about, like, this big fight that the Garadevs had, right, is through the Dance of Deduction. And so I had some more thoughts about that. Firstly, Sholmes is like, I don't think this is actually related to the case at all, which obviously it ends up being because it's a study, but Aruna Suki says, uncovering the truth is always worthwhile, whatever the motivation, at least that's what I want to believe, which is so funny, like back-to-back, like truth versus belief. Oh, I forgot to mention actually also, like, through this whole case, Aruna Suki is like really shaken up by what happened in the Magilda trial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how can I believe in people when, like, they might be lying to me, which is so funny because, like, this is not a thing that comes up in, like, the original trilogy. Like, they are literally just like, fuck you, like, I will always believe in my client. And this feels a little bit more grounded, really, right? Like, I think that, like, sense of belief in the trilogy is really fun, and especially when it gets subverted in, like, the Mountain Guard trial and stuff like that. But, like, to have Ryunosuke, like, show some doubt over it is really fun. And again, it just like feels like this game is like taking so many of the things from the original trilogy and like deepening them. So when Ryunosuke goes into this investigation, he's not like sure whether he's going to take on the case because he doesn't know whether he can believe Sosuke. And then eventually, I think it's through a conversation with Sholmes, he's like, I guess the only way is like you can see whether you believe them based on like how they talk and like the evidence that you have and stuff like that. And then you have to believe in yourself. Like you have to trust that you've made yourself the right decision. And so a lot of this case becomes about like self-belief. And I don't think this theory holds up like actually, but I think it's a really interesting thing for Ryunosuke to stick to. And he does really stick to it through this case. So
it's funny how it's not exactly progressive, but as you're saying, it's more grounded. It's funny how this stuff is technically happening in the past, like, which is something that in every case so far was there's been like a like an example of it or something. It's kind of like what happened, like what happened afterwards. Like I don't know. Same with like some of the trial stuff with like the judges. It all feels like oh yeah, there's finally been like some maturity in like lawyers and maybe the prosecutors as well and like the courtrooms and whatnot. It's like oh yeah, but this happened like years and years and years ago. It's a fun thing that keeps making me laugh whenever I do like put one and one together.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about it, right, is like the narrative is back in time, but like it's so clearly like building on the themes of the original trilogy, so it feels like a sequel as well. Which I mean, that's how prequels work, like that's fine, but it's really interesting.
I saw your note once again reminded me, even though I don't stand by it. But once again, going against me, saying like, oh yeah, you can play this first. Or like, rather, I said, there's people that say yeah, that you can like start the series with this. And you were like, basically saying this. Of like, yeah, no, this is building up on like existing themes.
It's so important. It's so important. I will say, this duology has some really good quality of life changes. Like, there are no movement trees. Remember how much we talked about those in the original trilogy?
Movement trees.
Like, in the, what's his name? Juan Carrida was the victim. Will Powers. In the Will Powers case, you would have to, like, go to the studio and then go to, like, the, like, lot and then go into, like, one of the buildings. And, like, you would have to remember the way, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas in this one, you could just scroll through a list of every area and it's so much better. So there are some things like that that, you know, I respect. However, play the trilogy, use a walkthrough. But yeah, going back to the Dance of Deduction, I think, like, we were talking about this and how, like, it doesn't really feel like looking for a contradiction, even though you're, like, correcting Sholmes. And I realized in this one that it's much more just, like, a spatial puzzle because it's so often, like, oh, she's looking at this thing, so that must mean that's what it is. And then you, like, spin the screen and you see that, like, actually behind that there's something, you know? and that's the actual answer. And I think it's so interesting because it's not really a logic puzzle at all. And like Ace Attorney to this point has basically only been logic puzzles. And it kind of has to. I guess this is most similar to Perceive, right?
Yeah.
But like, I feel like this with a lot of the animations and like just the kind of graphics of this one in general is like, the characters are 3D, like, rigs, which I guess they were in, like, the Apollo Justice trilogy as well, but in this one they actually use them and, like, move the camera around like a free camera, you know? And, like, that is, like, part of the game and part of the visuals and also part of the gameplay in a way that just, like, hasn't happened in Ace Attorney before. And I don't know, it's really interesting. Like, I still don't really find dancer deduction that engaging as an actual mechanic, but I think it gives Great Ace Attorney this different feeling that it is, like, set. It does feel like I'm actually, like, in a world that I could walk around, whereas the rest of the Ace Attorney games, it feels a lot more, like, visual novelish, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else from this investigation?
The quote-unquote motive, or like the, I don't know how to say it, like the premise of it, or like how do y'all talk about wife / the male sucks? And it sucks that it just becomes like a whole thing throughout like the whole case, which is basically like, in the beginning, Sholm's like original deduction was like, oh yeah, you bought a lion, and like... the lion right. wrecked the entire place, and then you are gonna like take the lion to like a circus, which, by the way, we don't know anything about a circus aside from that mention, so hopefully it comes around and we have Big Top 2, the most the most acclaimed revival in the Ace Attorney series, finally getting its dues. And anyway, and then it's like, yeah, no, it wasn't exactly a lion, but it was a beast. And the beast was the wife, because she's fat. That's basically it. And it's, yeah, I think Susada a few times is kind of like, hey, you shouldn't be saying that, those kinds of things, or something. Because Irinosuke is just going ham on it, you know.
That's true. I definitely think there's some fatphobia there. I think also there's just like the, oh, the old ball and chain, doesn't my wife suck kind of thing. Which kind of gets subverted by the end. I don't know, like, we'll get to that when we get to it, but I don't know, it is a weird one. I think, speaking of Susato, like, I've made like a little like references of Susato rules, like I've been putting in my summaries, and like we've been talking about it, but I think this case is where like she really shines as like what we call a weird little girl, like an assistant character. Who, I don't know, like, she's done so much better than the others, and I love Maya, and I love all the weird little girls, right? But Susato gets to be competent in a way that the others don't. I know, like, we talked before about how, like, Maya is so underrated by the narrative itself, by, like, how much she helps Phoenix out, and probably a lot of the others as well, but, like, Maya was definitely the one that we talked about the most. Like, at least so far, Susato hasn't been in any trouble of her own, like, she has just been helping out.
Oh, yeah.
But in a way that is very, like, just much more acknowledged. Like, Maya is Phoenix's assistant, but it's kind of accidental, right? She just starts doing that out of nowhere. Whereas, like, Susato is, like, the judicial assistant, like, sent out on this trip. And, like, unlike Ryunosuke, right? Like, she has training. She has, like, a basis for what she's doing. And there is some weird shit, like, she often, like, says stuff in the courtroom and the judge is like, yeah, we'll allow you to speak, like, we're so nice to women here, so, like, we allow you to do this. And, like, well, actually, it's interesting, right, because it shows, like, the, like, hypocrisy of the court about how they're like, yeah, we're so liberal, but then, like, we also just execute people all the time. I actually do think that works pretty well. But, yeah, just having, like, Susato as, like, a female assistant character, which is, like, such a well-done trope in Ace Attorney, but, like, taken seriously by the story, but in this time where, like, but in this setting where, like, she's not necessarily taken seriously, like, outside of that, like, we have that part in the first trial in Japan where she's not allowed to speak in front of the court, and so I think there's a tension there, but I think it's really interesting, like, if that moment had happened in a game where the assistant was like Maya and just like not really taken seriously by the narrative, I don't think it would have really made any difference, because it's just like, yeah, well, they don't really like take, like, the narrative isn't taking these people seriously, so it doesn't really matter whether the court takes these people seriously. Whereas like Susato is so shown to be like so knowledgeable and like really good in court that like it actually does make it make a lot more sense, or like it actually makes it a lot more meaningful when the court in Japan is like, you're not allowed to do this. Right. So, I don't know, just, like, definitely don't have a conclusion to that yet, because we have a lot more Sazaja to go, but, like, I don't know, it's really refreshing at the moment to see how she's treated by the narrative, for sure.
I'm gonna say, if she gets mired, if it only happens once, I'll take it. If it happens more than once, then I just delete the entire podcast from the platforms.
Wow. Hey, Takumi in the past, please be careful. yeah, one more thing I wanted to say about the investigation. You tweeted about this, but like a little bit earlier than like the line before the bit that I thought. This was my favorite, maybe my favorite joke in all of Ace Attorney. Now, I remember saying this before, so I would have to find out what joke I said that about before and see which one was better. But this is one of my favorite jokes in Ace Attorney. Suzuki asks Ryunosuke to summarize something in exactly 16 words. And Ryunosuke says, "No defendant has ever survived a trial in which the Reaper stands for the prosecution, ever." And it's so funny because Suzuki, I know I'm just explaining the joke now, which makes it less funny, but Suzuki doesn't say 16 words or less. He says 16 words. So Ryunosuke has to add an extra ever. Oh my god. It really made me laugh.
Yeah, I was gonna like, because I saw the first half of the joke, and I did the tweet, like it took me like a minute or so.
Yeah.
And then I pressed X, and I saw the other part, and started laughing like even more. I was like, oh, this is great.
Also, like, obviously in that conversation, they're talking about Van Zeeks and like how everyone dies. And I was gonna be like, it really implies that Van Zeeks kills them. But then they actually bring that up in the story. They're like, oh, no, like, it wasn't that he kills them. It's just that, like, they happen to die. Or like, oh, you can't believe that he would really kill them. So, like, I like the fact they brought that up, because it's something that you would definitely think about as the player.
Yeah, I think it shows, like, laughing and saying, like, hey, he's not a mass murderer, you know? Whatever you're thinking, like, it's not that.
Yeah, so I think I'm ready for the trial. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about with the investigation?
No.
Okay, well... here was something that was fun, was that I was waiting, because I couldn't remember when you talked about, oh, I'm sure they'll repeat jurors and stuff, and I was like, I actually don't know if they do, and they kind of do, they kind of don't, but it was fun to see the jury, for sure. Do you want to give
they
the
They have
the
archetypes, I think, which is fun.
Yeah.
It was very interesting to see that one of the people that were on the witness stand in the previous case, mm-hmm. that got on the juror stand now.
Yeah, so that was definitely like a case of them needing to repeat characters, right? But I think it's a smart way of doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was juror number one, was the guy, the lawyer, the banker, not the lawyer, the banker from the last mm-hmm. case, the witness. I don't know if we talked about him very much. He wasn't very interesting. He's not very interesting here either, but it's a fun way of like redoing them. Which other jurors stood out to you?
I mean, we both are going to talk about juror number six, because he wasn't the funniest.
Juror number six did nothing wrong.
No. He's like this old chap, I think. which is like whenever like the camera like pans out like on him, it's kind of like, oh, sorry, what did you say? Sorry, I didn't hear you. And then it starts becoming a bit where it's like Ryunosuke or like somebody says something and he just like he says it but like with other words, like understands like how it sounds and then makes a joke with like different words. And then he fucking snaps. And it's like the funniest thing ever because he didn't expect him to do that. He has a whole thing going on. He's great.
Yeah, he's great.
You mentioned like number you five said, as a... Oh, sorry.
Well, like you said, it's like the archetype, right? Because last time it was that old lady who was just like knitting and not really paying attention. So like juror six so far has just been like old person who doesn't really know what's going on. It's fun. And yeah, like juror number five, like you said, is like a... Again, it's like the archetype. So last time it was the guild leader for the buses. And now it's like a day laborer. And I think this is so interesting because it doesn't really have any relation to the case. Like if you took this out... Like, the story would be the same. But, like, there's this whole mini plot going on about how this guy shows up for work every day and is, like, given a task to do. And if he doesn't show up, he doesn't get paid. And, like, that's just how, like, a lot of day laboring was done in this era. And so he's like, well, I had to come to the trial today. And so I'm not getting any money. So my wife and I are going to be hungry. Like, I don't know. It's just a really interesting little, like... bit of social commentary that is just like so I don't know, like again it just goes to like Greatest Attorney actually having context and actually having like a wider world of injustice rather than just being like our legal system sucks but we're not gonna like tie that into anything.
Yeah,
I think the rest of the jurors are pretty standard, except that one of them is Mrs. Garadev, which is just, like, very clearly for convenience's sake, but ends up working pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I think that they made, like, a good case here of, like, oh, this is what we can do. We, like, you know, having to have, because, like, this is our own grade now. We have to have, like, 16 characters every time. So it's kind of like, yeah, we can, like, try and go for, like, a few archetypes, like, making extremely different characters each time. And then we can have, like, a witness from a previous case or, like, a witness of this case that's going to, like, become relevant afterwards. So, yeah, good move.
Yeah, and then we kind of get into this trial. I think it's so interesting that, like, this case is based on the most flimsy evidence in the world, and it's highly implied, but not quite said outright, that, like, racism plays a big part in it, because obviously Suzuki is also Japanese. And, like, how that ties into the jury stuff, which we were talking about before, about how, like, Van Zeeks thinks that a jury trial is a really bad idea, because it's just, like, so biased. And, like, I think I even said at the time, like, yeah, and one of the things about juries in real life is that they can be very racist, but, like, I don't know if that's gonna come up. Well, it did! It did come up! And again, like, I just think it's so interesting that, like, they finally put a jury in Ace Attorney and it's just as bad as all the other things. And, like, Van Zeeks is basically the main person being like, this sucks.
Yeah. Oh, that's something that I didn't get to mention, like, from the investigation that I really liked, which is basically, like, again, because, like, you know, it's like having, like, all these doubts about, like, well, should I trust my clients or not? And you basically go through, like, the investigation in the hopes of having, like, leading to that conclusion of, like, oh, okay, yeah, I have, like, enough evidence, like we talk about. I have enough evidence to, like, trust Suzuki and, like, be like, yeah, okay, I'll defend you tomorrow. And one of the things that Suzuki says is, like, I think I have the quote. I would like to entrust my fate to someone who can listen to me in my native tongue. Mm. And I don't know, it felt like, it felt like such a heartfelt, like, sentiment of, like, this person is, like, yeah, like, since I came here, like, a year ago, it's been, like, I feel like people are, like, talking about me all the time, and, like, I'm constantly looking over my shoulder. And it's kind of, like, play out of, like, yeah, they play some things, chorus and whatnot, and blah, blah. So it kind of becomes, like, kind of like a joke. But I think, like, the central sentiment of it, I don't know, it feels like a good way of seeing what we've been talking about in the previous cases of, like, oh, yeah, you always have, like, someone. Like, there's people, like, from these thing places from the war, and they kind of, like, some have, like, more relevance than others. But this was, it kind of becomes like, oh yeah, it's kind of like somebody who can't rely on, like, Ryunosuke and Susato just purely out of, like, oh yeah, we are all from Japan. And we are, like, basically in, like, a place that everybody says horrible shit to us, like, all the time. So yeah, it was, like, a cool, it's not the thing that convinces Ryunosuke in the end. That's fucking Shoms. But I really like that bit, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. For the, like, structure of the trial itself, I think it's really weird, honestly, and I would love to hear what you think about it, because we spend, like, the first half of the trial being, like, maybe Suzuki wasn't even there, even though Suzuki admits that he saw the woman get stabbed and all of his books that he dropped are there. And it just seems so weird to me because it's like, we all know he was there, but we spend so much time and effort proving that he quote unquote wasn't, and then it turns out he was. And it's like, okay. And then as soon as we've done that, it, like, opens the possibility that, like, it says, like, oh, this burned book, like, fell, or, like, there was a burned book there. And in my brain, now, here's the thing, this is why I'm not sure. I, of course, have played this before. Now, I wouldn't say I have any memory of it, but, like, of course, when something reminds you of it, you can just think, like, whatever. But as soon as they talked about the burned book, I was like, oh, I know exactly what happened. It was because they were throwing stuff out the fucking window. So the trial just felt so weird to me because the first half is, like, nothing. Like, it's completely irrelevant. And then as soon as they introduced the evidence, like, I knew exactly what was going to happen. And I think that's why the pacing felt so, well, I don't know, right? Like, and then I was expecting the second half to be, like, really annoying and grindy. Now, one reason for that is that I had written down that this case was 6 hours long, and it only ended up taking me 4 hours. So I was sitting there thinking, oh my god, I still have, like, 3 hours left of this? And it turned out it was only one. So I think that's why, like, I was actually pleasantly surprised. So that's one reason. But, like, it didn't, like, drag out this thing too much. I felt like it dragged out a little bit. I don't know. Anyway, I'm curious as to what you think, because I felt like so much of this was, like, me being like, do I remember this, or did I just immediately know what was happening, and then, like, that, like, affected how I felt about the rest of the case?
Yeah, I think for me, again, as I was saying, like, in the beginning of the episode, I was hooked on the mystery, as in a way of saying, I didn't know exactly what happened until, like, almost the very end. Because, like, truth be told, like, the actual thing that happened is, like, I don't want to say stupid, but it's, I mean, it's, like, very AA, but you don't really go to that conclusion, like, right away, especially when they talk about, like, the windows and how they are shaped and whatnot, or how they open, rather. Which is, like, yeah, it's not, like, they threw something to, like, all the way across the street, which is, like, I think it's, like, 14 meters or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think at first, when they were going on Shura number 6, being like, oh, but you have a green coat, and you were on the street, and you sleep.
Right.
And I thought, like, yeah, maybe that happened, like, beforehand or something like that. And by the time they were there, like Soseki wasn't there or something like that. And the other, like, the first possibility that they presented was kind of plausible. Until they were like, yeah, no, that was, like, 2 yards wide. Like, it wasn't, like, it's not like the Northern Street was, like, closed out or something. Because, like, Shura number 5 was, like, working there. And, yeah, by the end, I was like, well, maybe, like, maybe the person that got stabbed was, like, in the building for some reason, and, like, and they had to get out. And I was like, did she get stabbed and then, like, fell to the ground, like, afterwards? Or, yeah, I don't know. My mind was kind of, like, all over the place.
That's fair. I guess it was my memory kicking in then.
Yeah.
I think another thing that makes this whole thing really confusing is that the person who got stabbed in this case isn't dead.
No,
but they kind of keep forgetting that when they write the case. It's kind of weird. And also, like, I'm guessing that the reason she isn't dead is because they didn't want, like, so what actually happened is that Mrs. Garadev, like, was throwing stuff around and, like, the knife fell out of the window. Like you say, it's really stupid. The knife fell out of the window and, like, stabbed her in the back, right? But, like, it's really confusing how she went into a coma from that, basically, because, like, there's pictures from the scene and there's, like, no blood. It's not like she lost so much blood that, like, she was really... I guess that is what it's supposed to be, but, like, I don't know. It just, like, doesn't really hang together in that way, which is kind of weird, but I don't know. I thought the whole case was kind of, like... Actually, it's really interesting because we've talked before about cases where it's like, oh yeah, the mystery like got me through it, but I was kind of bored by the case in general, but like at least there was like a good premise to it. Whereas honestly, I think the premise of this case kind of sucks, but the case itself was fun. I think it has a lot to do with the characters. Like, we've talked before about having stakes. Like, I don't really care about the Garadevs. I kind of care about Soseki. Like you say, it's nice to have this, like, I think that moment where he's like, I would like to... be able to talk to someone in my native language is, like, really endearing. And, like, just seeing how he's been living and, like, how clearly miserable he is. Like, I think there is some endearing stuff there. I don't really find him that engaging. I think a lot more of it is just to do with, like, Rinosuke and Susato and Sholmes as well. And, like, I don't know, the writing of the case is fun. Like, I think there's a lot of, like, good jokes even. Like, that just helps to get through and stuff like that. I think it's really interesting to compare, like, almost, like, the texture of the cases, where it's, like, this case kind of fundamentally wasn't that great, but it just was like carried along by its writing, whereas like other cases I've been like, oh, I wish this case was good, but unfortunately the writing is bad.
The elephant in the room here is that Van 6 carried the case, or the trial rather.
Say more about this.
No, I'm mostly joking. Well, he had like really good lines, and he had like, aside from like a few funny ones, which I don't know, I think every meme that I've seen, like, against my will of this guy comes from this trial from, like, years ago. I mean, he has, like, a lot of, like, racist rants over and over again, which keeps on preventing me from being like, oh, this is a good character. No, it's not. But he has, like, really interesting, like, again, as you were saying, like, he all leads to a place where he's like, yeah, maybe, like, the shores, like, aren't that great. And, like, things keep, like, going, like, from... oh yeah, he's guilty, he's not guilty, he's guilty, he's not guilty, like back and forth all the time. And then he comes to that one place that kind of happened in the previous case as well, where it's like, okay, I'm just gonna like collaborate with Ryunosuke if I don't want to admit it because I'm a fucking, I don't know.
Racist.
Like as a person, yeah. I was gonna say like self-indulgent something.
Right. Yeah, he would do this to any defense attorney, but he does it especially to Ryusuke. I don't know, like, I don't want to say too much about Van Zeeks because I remember things, so I'm poisoned by knowledge. But I do find it really interesting that you like a lot of his character, or like, that you've like a lot of his lines, at least. I don't know whether it's fair to say you like his character. But yeah, I think something to talk about in the future, because I'm going to not say anything now.
Oh, is he the prosecutor in the second game? I assume he is.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry for what I'm going to say, because you understand where I'm coming from. But I think aside from Edgeworth, he's like the only prosecutor that has like that amount of time to like develop.
That's true.
Hmm.
Although we only saw him from case 3 of this game, so it's kind of like...
Yeah. And aside from Payne, but you know, he never changed.
One thing I will say is, like, you know, I complained last time about how he breaks the bottle, the glass, like, immediately, and I was like, they went off too early. When he flings the bottle this time, that was very worth it. However, then he goes back to breaking glasses, and I'm like, well, they needed to, like, hold that escalation. You know, it was, like, worth it in the moment, but then it went too far, I think, you know?
Mm.
But it was both ways, I think.
And he has new animations as well this time around, which we were talking about earlier today before recording. I was like, is that a fucking Christoph Gavin stance? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, him kind of going, like, full Shocker 5 mode was, like, very funny.
Well, you know, people love to speculate in this game about, like, who's the ancestor of who, because the only confirmed one is Ryunosuke and Phoenix. Every time I say that, I want to say Ryunosuke and Naruhodo, which is, that's just his full name, but also, like, it's Phoenix's Japanese name. I almost said German, which is very funny. So, like, of course, like, yeah, that makes sense. But people have to speculate, like, oh, is... I don't want to give any of the speculations in case there's somehow spoilers. I don't think I've ever seen the speculation. Could Van Zeeks be a Christoph and Clavier Gavin ancestor? I mean, Van Zeeks is a German name, I think, and the Gavin's a question mark German or just pretending to be German? Who could say? I don't know. Funny. I think that's a very funny... That's my personal headcanon now, just because it's so funny. There's some new music in this case.
Yeah.
One of them sounds like it should be on a Pokemon soundtrack. That's all I have to say because you're the music guy, but that one got me.
Yeah, I don't think I wrote a note on that one. Specifically. But I did like the one that plays out, I don't know, like, at one point, Ryunosuke is kind of, I think it's when the, like, the first part of the trial ends, basically. Or it's kind of like, it's like a small cutscene with, like, a 3-4 tops, like, dialogue lines of him being like, oh, wait, I'm actually here, like, in the old valley, like, representing somebody. Like, this is the one time that I've been, like, they struck me, basically, that I'm doing this. I think it's actually... trying to remember. I think it's like kind of like Van Zeeks being like kind of like conceding a bit and like kind of starting to like help him. But I might be wrong on that. But it was like a really cool moment that it takes you like out of the trial itself for a bit. There's like a new song that feels kind of like building up on like a few of the songs that we've been hearing. And then there's like another one where it's kind of like, oh, I'm basically like the trial's over and like I basically like led to like the conclusive argument or like the conclusive evidence, which is like before presenting the final piece of evidence, I think. And I think we didn't hear that one before. It was really good. But yeah, the music itself. I think at one point I was like, oh, this song is so good, I want to like throw my couch or the window or something. Because I felt like...
I did see that now. It was very funny.
Really great soundtrack.
Yeah, I think. I just have a few things about like the end of the case. So like, you know, I said this in the summary, but like... the two main witnesses are the cop and his wife, and like the fact that the cop moved the victim is like such a weird like combination of like ACAB and also workers' rights, because they spend so much of this case like building up how hard it is to be a policeman. In a way, I didn't actually look this up, but I assume this is also true in the same way as like the window tax stuff, about how they have to walk like 20 miles a day and like never be off duty basically. And so he's like always falling asleep on the stand, and he's like,
I haven't slept in a month.
Yeah. I just really wanted to have an evening with my wife type stuff. And it's like, I think you're supposed to feel like sympathetic for him overall, but it's really funny because like so much of this game is about like the system being fucked up, etc., etc. And like they really make a big deal about how like, oh, cops are good though. And then we've so far had like the one who stole a bunch of stuff from the crime scene, and then the one who like actively like undermined the case. I think, like, we're primed to read it as ACAB, and it's not really ACAB, but, like, it's... but it also is, you know? Like, I don't think this is the intended read, but it is the read. And Van Sykes is weirdly lenient, right? Which I assume is like a thing about how much he loves cops, but it's just interesting in comparison to Edgeworth, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And how mean he is to Gumshoe. And, yeah, the other thing that's interesting about this case is, like, the comparison in the relationships between the cop and his wife and, like, the Garadevs. You had such a funny note. I scrolled past it, but I've just remembered. But you were like, Greatest Tony is teaching me that marriage and London both suck.
Yeah.
So true.
I think it was, like, a bit disappointing that, like him, like, the husband, kind of has, like, the shape of, like, because he's always looking at the side to, again, not show that he's been, like, slapped in the face. At first, at least. And he has, like, the shape of a half moon. And, like, she has the shape of, like, a, I believe it's kind of like a blowfish with, like, the hair on the side kind of, like, sometimes moves and it seems kind of like the legs, I guess.
Huh.
That's my read anyway. We're also like, what the fuck does a half moon and a fish, like, have to do? Like, you could have done, like, something more. Like, I don't know, like, a perfectly round face for, like, her or, like, something.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, to be honest. That's interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah, the other thing that I think is interesting is your note here about, like, how this case was kind of weird, which I didn't really think about until I read it, so I would love for you to talk about that.
Yeah, I know that you've been saying, like, oh, this actually feels like a conclusive case. Yeah,
the opposite of what I was saying, but I actually, when I read it, was like, oh, wait, hang on.
No, I mean, it sound, yeah, it felt like the premise of it being, like, yeah, you know, she wasn't murdered, actually. You know, the game forgets that sometimes. And then there's also the thing about that Ryunosuke says towards the end, where it's like, oh, it's kind of weird that we've been talking about this person the whole time, and yet we haven't, like, been able to, like, hear from her. It's kind of left out, like, as a lingering thought to, like, keep in mind. I don't know if they're gonna, like, come back to it or not. But yeah, it felt like, I don't know, strange maybe? Because, like, it was also an accident, you know, like a stupid series of events that led to, like, the stabbing, basically.
Yeah.
But it was also, like, yeah, people that had, like, nothing to do with, like, anything else that was happening around them. I don't know. I like the liberty that the game is taking, like, with the cases. As again, like, in comparison to 5 and 6, which felt like, oh, remember this? Well, we're gonna, like, change a few things and, like, deliver it to you again. So I'm really liking that so far.
Yeah, it definitely feels different and, like, just a bit less serious overall, right? Like, the person didn't die and, like, it was an accident. I will say that, like, the way that accidents have been treated in Ace Attorney, like, if this was, like, a regular mainline Ace Attorney game, like, Mrs. Garadev would be fucking cooked. And maybe that's why they made the woman not die. But, like, I don't know. Like, it still feels like it would have been taken so seriously in the mainline games. Whereas in this one, it, like, as far as we know, she just gets in no trouble. Which is kind of fucked because she actually was attacking her husband. But, like, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, you can have, like, a different conversation in court, like, another day about what happened. But
yeah. But there's no, there's no indication that they're actually going to do that, which is, like, weird for Ace Attorney. Because, like, we've seen other things where, like, oh, like, that person has been, like, they're like, oh, that person's been arrested now. Like, we never find out what happened to them, but, like, it's just told as part of the story, right?
Hmm. It kind of feels like a ghost trick thing.
It does, actually, yeah, Jesus. I don't know. It's really fun to, like, see parallels, actually. Like, it's really interesting to see how this and Ghost Trick and Layton genuinely feel more similar in some ways than Ace Attorney 5 and 6. Especially this and Ghost Trick and Ace Attorney 4 feel like kind of they're playing in the same space. Whereas, like, Layton is a bit different, but there's definitely still some parallels. And then 5 and 6 feel so different. It's weird.
I'm so glad this game succeeds. Having played, like, all the previous ones now.
I'm really glad that they're as good as they are. Like, I was expecting it to be like, yeah, they're a little bit better than 5 and 6, but they're still, like, just fine. Whereas I'm like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. Like, it's not the trilogy, but the trilogy is filled with so much nostalgia to me that, like, nothing ever could be. But, like, in terms of actual, like, if I try and, like, take a step back and look a bit more objectively, I'm like, oh, this is really good. Well, I was expecting it to be, like, somewhere, well, it is, right? It's somewhere between the two trilogies in terms of, like, quality to me. But, like, I was expecting it to be way closer to the Apollo Justice trilogy. But it's not. It's good. Do you want to talk? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Then. About what? Yeah, tell me.
Well, I was going to say the pacing.
The pacing of what, exactly? I think I made a note on that.
I don't know. You said I have thoughts about the pacing of this game.
Oh, yeah, no, we talk about...
And I would love to know what those thoughts are.
Thank you for inquiring about my thoughts. Somebody cares about my thoughts. No, it's the thing that we talk...
I made a whole podcast about it, what?
It's the thing that we talk about in the beginning. Of like, okay, hey, it's only one case left. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. What were you going to say before?
Yeah, no, I was trying to do a mental recap. It's kind of like, has anyone been arrested yet? Because I don't think anyone has.
Pavlova was arrested. They removed her from the ship and they said that they were going to do justice to her. I don't know why I was saying it like that. They said that they were going to arrest her in Hong Kong, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Which is okay. Interesting, right? Because, like, we don't really know what happened to her. But again, like, that was kind of an accident. So we assumed that, like, it should be, like, more lenient than a murder, at least. So yeah, like, we've had the first case where, like, Giselle just walked away. We had Pavlova, which was an accident. We've had McGilded, where we don't know whether he did it or not, and then he died. Like, that's the whole thing. And then we have this, where Mrs. Garadep seems to have, again, like, done an accidental, like, grievous bodily harm, but doesn't, as far as we know, get arrested or anything. So actually, yeah, going back to what I was saying about, like, oh, we finally have some resolution. Like, no, every single case in this has been, like, nothing like the Ace Attorney trilogy, which is always, like, there was a murder, our guy was accused, we're going to find out who really did it, and they're going to go to jail. Like, it's so off formula, actually. It's really interesting. And I don't remember what happens in the next one, so that's really interesting, because we know it's very long, and we know, like, this game kind of feels like it's just getting starting still, so I'm very curious about what the actual crime is going to be that's going to, like, pin it down, because it's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, it's going to start with a reel of, like, every single, like, defendant, like, being killed. In cold blood. And then you had to go and, like, travel and, like, find out what happened. Nah, just, like, fucking say whatever. But, yeah, I'm really curious about how it's gonna be, like, structure. I hope it's not, like, a cliffhanger. And they were like, yeah, we're gonna have a second game anyway, so it's fine.
Well, at least for us, we're gonna go and play the second game immediately, so...
Yeah. Were they, like... Oh, yeah, I assume they have been. At least in the beginning. Like, released separately.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's one thing I'm really curious about, because for us, like, as in English speakers, they were released together, right? So, like, yeah, it doesn't really matter how much of a cliffhanger it is, or, like, I'm worried less about a cliffhanger and more about, like, stuff that you would have to remember in between the sequels, right? Like, if they leave plot lines unfinished, which I genuinely don't remember, but I'm assuming they do, right? Just because of how much is going on. That's, like, the bigger thing to me. And then in, you know, when they first were released in Japan, you had to wait, like, I don't know how long it was, but, like, I'm guessing 2 years, probably. And, like, yeah, just would have forgotten a lot of what was going on. But for us, we're going to just pick up straight away. And, like, that is how they were released in the West. So that's interesting, too.
Yeah, it was 2 years. Mm. 2015 and 2017.
Yeah.
Hey, we can write an anniversary piece next year.
Only for the first game, though. And also not in the West, so it's kind of weird because it will have only come out, like, 4 years ago.
Oh, wait. That's almost 5 years. Actually.
That, almost.
Fuck. Fucking Saturday View.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, I really had to stop myself keeping playing. Partly because I was like, it's a long case, so, like, maybe it's worth, like, just getting ahead. But I had to be honest with myself, and I had to be like, I just want to play. And I had to be like, no, I'm going to wait until next week.
Yeah, same. I'm also on this spot of, like, oh, no, I'm just trying to get ahead. And then I'm going to play for like 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, I look forward to playing and recording and talking about that. Is there anything else you want to talk about in this case?
No, I don't think so.
Cool. JM Costello. I don't care. Just find me. I basically have successfully got it off Twitter now. I only use it for like sharing work. It's great. I feel really good about it. Don't listen to this podcast a year ago where I was like, I will never be on Blue Sky, because that's where I mostly do stuff now. But even then, I rarely actually, I think I make like maybe 10 posts a week, which is not bad. I feel good about where I'm at, but I also feel like it's kind of scary because I don't have anywhere to share work, really. And that was Social Media Corner for the beginning of 2024, which by the time you listen to this may have changed significantly anyway. How are you feeling, Diego?
Have you deleted Twitter off your phone? Maybe you did this like
I haven't had Twitter on my phone for a long time, yeah. Like at least I remember I downloaded it again when I went on holiday or something, because I was like, oh, I'm like going to be bored, basically. And then I deleted it again. So like, I've had it on and off, but I haven't had it for a long time on my phone for like at least 6 months. I'm not sure how long, really.
Damn. Anyway, add the
other way. You're on Twitter still? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still getting more likes and engagement. Quote unquote engagement, trademark there, than on Blue Sky. So,
yeah.
For now, unfortunately, you're going to be finding me there most of the time. But yeah, I also had like this moment of like, should I just like share work stuff and be done with it and use Blue Sky for like whatever else comes around? But I haven't figured out that yet. So,
I really want to figure out co-host. Maybe that will be my goal by the time this episode comes out, is to actually be using co-host.
Somebody said there was, I'm sorry to say this, but there was like gaming discourse on co-host like a few
for
days
ago. For fuck's sake!
Yeah. Literally yesterday. So I don't know what to tell you about it.
Never mind. I'm gonna go and lie in the river. Come find me there.
I'm realizing I didn't have the one pun for this one.
Uh-huh.
One was pipe dream. But we didn't talk about, you know, the tip of the blade being inside the pipe. And there was tip of the iceberg or tip of the knife, I think I'm reading. But you laugh more with pipe dream, so I'm going to go with pipe dream.
The thing I laughed about with pipe dream, which I also am laughing about with tip of the knife / iceberg, is that you write the puns in your notes now, which you didn't always. But you also kind of try and hide them, I guess, so that I don't know what you're about to say. But you wrote pipe dream, and so I obviously knew that was pipe dream. And then I was looking at what you wrote is tip of the KN / IC. And I thought you just like typoed knife, or like, I couldn't figure out what that was about. Anyway, this is more fun to me than the puns, to be honest, is the fucking trying to decode what you're talking about. So thank you.
I come up with one with the word belief for the next one. Depending. Okay.
If good luck, that's hard.
What I'm thinking that's gonna happens in the next one.
Oh my god, it's based on a prediction as well. This is so fun.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Same. I'm looking forward to my own pun. I'm looking forward to my own genius.
We know you are. You're always, that's fucking the MO with you.
I'm gonna quote Shura number 6 and say, wait, I think I did that.
You here. Did.
Is it a crime to do a pun at the end of every episode? Eh? Is it?
Yes.